Hello and welcome to the first in a new series of podcasts developed by the European Respiratory Society and featured on the newly launched ERS Respiratory Channel. My name is Diana Stolz. I'm a pulmonary physician involved in the ERS COVID guidelines led by James Chalmers and Nicola Roche. In this first podcast, I will be discussing the use of tocilizumab in targeting IL-6 in COVID-19. And as you probably know, there have been various studies to assess the role of tocilizumab in reducing the risk of invasive mechanical ventilation and death in patients with severe COVID-19 pneumonia. But the findings have been both inconclusive and controversial. So there are still a lot of questions about tocilizumab, like when is the best time to prescribe the drug and to which patients. Joining me to discuss all this and more is Dr. Lenny Dirt. Lenny is an ICU consultant at the UMC Utrecht in the Netherlands. She was trained as an ID physician and epidemiologist and is now involved in and leading a number of investigations, guideline groups, and committees in Europe. Her research focuses on the treatment and prevention of severe infections and sepsis in critically ill patients and the use of innovative trial design. Our discussion was recorded in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, so unfortunately we weren't able to meet face to face, but still we had a very nice conversation.
Lenny, can you tell us a little bit about you?
Hi, Diana. Well, thanks very much for inviting me. So I work as an intensivist at the University Medical Center in Utrecht in the Netherlands. We call Utrecht the smallest of the big cities in the Netherlands. It's almost exactly in the center. And there I divide my time between being an intensivist and doing research. And my main project is REMAP-CAP, started in 2014. Designed to adapt to the pandemic.
Great. So you are working at the intensive care unit and you've seen, unfortunately, many COVID patients. So why are we talking with you about tocilizumab? Is this a funny name, isn't it? Is it the right pronunciation to start with?
That's actually not a very easy question to start with. So I'm not the person to talk about how to pronounce things in English because I'm not a native speaker. I know Boris Johnson struggled with saying tocilizumab when he did a press moment after we concluded in REMAP-CAP that tocilizumab works, but we'll get to that later. So I usually say tocilizumab, but if we keep it short and say toci, we won't stumble.
Okay, so it sounds familiar, toci or tocilizumab. So is it an interleukin 6 blockage, right?
Yes, definitely. It's an IL-6 receptor antagonist. And in that sense, it's very much similar to sarilumab.
I mean, this sounds like a medication we've been using in rheumatology for the last years. Why are we discussing this in the context of COVID?
I think all the listeners will recognize that COVID-19 is a disease that kind of comes in phases. So some people have little or no complaints. They never hit the hospital, so to say. And then in the beginning of the disease, people are ill, presumably from the virus itself. But what every intensive care doctor or doctor taking care of COVID patients on the ward can tell you, I think, is that at some point it seems that these patients are not suffering from the virus anymore, but are suffering from some kind of hyperinflammatory response. In the beginning of the pandemic, that was called a cytokine storm. I don't know if that's the proper term for it, and there are more people who doubt that. But what we do know is that in a second phase of the disease, the overreaction of the immune system is the thing that is making people sick and is causing ARDS. And IL-6 is a cytokine involved in that response. So in the beginning of the pandemic, we thought these people may have, you know, very high levels of IL-6. That's not the case. For instance, patients with bacterial sepsis have much higher levels of IL-6, but it's definitely one of the key cytokines in this hyperinflammatory response that we see. And that is, I think, at least for us, that was the reason to think that that would be a good target for therapy for hospitalized patients.
So Lenny, what you're telling us is after the stage one of early infection, when the viral response phase, we move into a stage two and three with a more inflammatory or hyperinflammatory phase in which the host inflammatory response is actually causing the damage in COVID. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. It's a pretty good summary. Yeah. Sorry for using a lot of words. You're getting straight to the point. Much better.
And that's why an interleukin 6 blockage could work in this phase. Is that the hypothesis behind this trial you were telling us about?
Yes, definitely. And we were not the first one. There have been several trials on tocilizumab in COVID-19 patients. But it was the reason for us in REMAP-CAP, a study I'm involved in, to investigate this.
Okay, so before you tell us about the results of this particular trial I've been involved with, I think up to now there are 8 trials out there that have been suggesting that the effect of tocilizumab is not that great in COVID. Is that how you see it? And why, based on that, why did you decide to go on and try it again?
All the trials bring something to the evidence base. All the trials teach us something. There are a couple of trials that were done very early on in the pandemic. So there's the STONE study published in New England Journal of Medicine in December of 2020. And then there is the Corimmuno-TOCI-1 part that's been published and the Salvarini trial. So those three were all conducted, let's say, before the summer. And before the summer, the treatment of COVID-19 was a little bit different than after the summer. Because in the summer, many trials, led by the recovery trial in the UK, because they were the first ones to find a result for their dexamethasone treatment. So those three trials that I just mentioned, they were all conducted in a background of COVID-19 patients not getting corticosteroids. And then there are the COVACTA and EMPECTA trials that were done by the producer of tocilizumab, or led by them. And then there's the Brazilian study, the small study that was recently published in the British Medical Journal. And then, as I said before, I'm involved in REMAP-CAP. So we concluded that tocilizumab was effective in critically ill patients half November. And then very recently, the recovery trial in the UK also put out a preprint on their findings on tocilizumab.
Okay, so I have to, it's a lot of information now. Let's try to sort it out. We had 8 trials that were performed with negative results, and you guys decided to repeat a trial with this drug. What is the difference between the REMAP-CAP, the trial you are involved with, and the trials that were performed before?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say so much we redid them, because the results of these early trials were only published between October and December of 2020. For us, the first patient was included in the trial already in April, but the majority of the patients indeed were included after the summer. So it's not so much that we saw results and then decided to do it again. I think all these things were going on in parallel, but there are important differences between those trials and the REMAP-CAP study.
Which are those differences? Is the population a difference? Is you said something about the use of steroids. So is the treatment or the co-treatment with steroids a big difference between those trials?
Yeah, so you're addressing two very good points. So I think the population was different. In the early trials, the population was less sick than the REMAP-CAP population. Those were mainly war-type patients who may have had oxygen, but not invasively mechanically ventilated. In some studies, not even things like high-flow nasal oxygen or non-invasive ventilation were allowed. So yeah, there's definitely a difference in population.
And which patient population has been included in the REMAP-CAP?
So we included critically ill patients. So there are a couple of criteria patients had to fulfill. They have to be clinically suspected of having COVID-19. They have to be admitted to an ICU, and they have to have either cardiovascular or respiratory organ support. And we know that for this group, all but 3 out of over 800 patients had respiratory organ support. So these were mainly people on high flow nasal oxygen, NIV, or invasive mechanical ventilation, admitted to an ICU. And we gave the drug within 24 hours of admission.
You told us, Lenny, that the population, including the REMAP-CAP, was sicker. So all of them were at the intensive care and required either ventilatory or circulatory support. And also they received the drug very early on of the admission to the ICU.
Yes, within 24 hours.
Do you think these are the reasons why tocilizumab worked out in REMAP-CAP?
Yes, so it's always difficult to say why something works, but this is the population that was included in our trial. I do think the recovery trial adds new information, because in their study, they had a large number of patients that were treated with only oxygen or with high flow nasal oxygen or NIV on the ward. And they did find an overall positive result also for these patients. So there must be a sweet spot somewhere, but I don't know where it is. I think what recovery has shown is that it may not be at the entrance to the ICU, it may be a little bit earlier, but we don't know where it starts being effective. Another big difference between these two trials, REMAP-CAP and the recovery trial and the early trials, is that in the REMAP-CAP study and recovery, most of the patients got steroids as standard of care. And that's very different from the studies that were carried out early on in the pandemic. That may also explain the difference. So I don't know, but that's speculation.
Okay, so in contrast to the previous studies, we have now two large studies that have suggested that tocilizumab works in COVID-19. Can you summarize the results actually from REMAP-CAP? How good this drug worked in this patient population?
Yeah, so in our critically ill population, tocilizumab and actually also sirolimumab reduced mortality. There was an absolute reduction in hospital mortality of 8.5%. So that means about 24% of all mortality was prevented, or said otherwise, you have to treat 12 patients with tocilizumab to save a life. So that's actually a pretty positive result for an ICU trial.
And how large was the REMAP-CAP? How many patients did you include?
We included just over 800 patients in this analysis that were critically ill.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a large population as compared to some other trials. So you had number needed to treat of 12. That's pretty impressive for a drug that have proved not to work under other circumstances. And your results are quite in line what we've seen from the recovery trial. The recovery trial was slightly larger with around 4,000 patients. And they also reported this decrease of mortality of around 4%, which was highly significant. They also reported some decrease in the time of hospitalization.
Yes, so that's the same in REMAP-CAP. So our primary endpoint is a composite outcome. It's an ordinal scale of death and days on organ support in the ICU. So that runs from -1. So you get assigned -1 days if you die. And if you are alive at day 21 after randomization, we count the number of days that you were off organ support. So we call that organ support free days. And tocilizumab reduced both mortality and the number of days on organ support in the ICU. So I actually think the results of REMAP-CAP and recovery are very much in line. Recovery included a slightly less severely ill population, but still a little bit more sick than the early studies on tocilizumab. And they show a slightly lower absolute mortality risk reduction, which I think makes sense, for the more ward patients. So I actually think the results of those two studies are quite in line with each other.
And I think this is really exciting news in the COVID field. It's kind of, we are searching for something that will work. And we are really, I think everybody's happy to see that this therapy is promising in treating these patients. Can you tell us, like, if we go in the subgroup analysis and we look a little bit more at the kind of patients that treated, we discussed those ones with a more severe disease that need mainly respiratory support. Did you see any difference in the age or gender of the responders in the REMAP-CAP?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. We didn't do analysis by subgroup or gender in REMAP-CAP. We did do a subgroup analysis stratified by CRP tertiles because we wanted to see whether that was a good stratification factor for the effect of tocilizumab. But actually, the result was similar in all the three subgroups. So we didn't find any differences there, which was interesting in itself. And we did some subgroup analysis based on the level of respiratory support, but all the analysis actually point in the same direction.
So this is also in agreement with the results of the recovery that suggested an effect across CRP tertiles with perhaps a bit of a stronger effect in the highest tertile, right? But I think one thing you said, it's important to mention that you included only patients with increased CRP levels at ICU admission. Is that right, Lenny? And how high was the CRP when they came into ICU care?
So we did not stratify enrollment by CRP level because we didn't know if that was a good biomarker of disease. So we did not stratify by CRP. So in a pre-specified subgroup analysis, we looked at the different tertiles of CRP, and we saw that the effect was similar for all subgroups. So for us, there was no difference in low or high CRP, let's say.
And how high was the mean CRP in the patient population included in REMAP-CAP? Do you know that by heart?
That's a very good question. I would have to look that up, but I think by heart it was around 140 or something.
Okay, so 140, it's quite high, actually. Those are patients that would usually consider to be infected or inflamed, let's say. Is this something that, combined with the information that the effect has been more preeminent or actually only observed if we take the recovery results in those patients receiving steroids, is this the criteria to decide which patient should be treated with tocilizumab? Those that have an increased CRP levels despite the use of steroids?
So in REMAP-CAP, in this subgroup analysis, it was not, because even though generally the CRP level was high, it was not a good stratifying factor to see kind of who did or did not respond to therapy. In recovery, I know that one of the inclusion criteria for getting tocilizumab, because they use that as a second randomization, was that you had to deteriorate and have a high CRP, but high was defined as over 75. So CRP doesn't seem to be kind of the black and white parameter for yes or no using tocilizumab. But for clinicians, it is important to know that, you know, with every patient now on steroids, and, you know, if tocilizumab would be given to patients, that also reduces your CRP. So then, you know, how do we know if patients have secondary infections, and is, for instance, a non-responding CRP to steroids or tocilizumab, is that an indicator that you have to do something else? Those are questions that we still have to answer, I think.
Coming up, Lenny and I will be addressing important issues relating to safety, cost, and the most effective dosage, and who should receive tocilizumab.
I guess we are all worried about, you know, leading the patients to a secondary bacterial or viral infection. And we all seen infection also with fungi complicating the course of COVID-19. And one of the trials we discussed previously, the Brazilian one, has been stopped because of safety concerns. What is your experience with this drug in the ICU patients? Is something we have to fear about using tocilizumab? Some side effects we have to be concerned about?
So the interesting thing is that even though the early studies have different results, kind of the studies without steroids as standard of care compared to these later studies that we have just now talked about, the one thing that all these studies have in common is that the reporting of secondary infections as SAEs is actually relatively low. Also in REMAP-CAP, there was no increase of secondary infections reported as SAEs in the trial. So how that plays out in clinical practice, I think we have to see. It's something we definitely have to be, you know, on the lookout for. And as you say, fungal infections of the lung, that's something that I think we're also starting to learn about. I don't know what you think, but it probably looks a little bit different. It's a little bit less than the fungal infections we see associated with influenza. But then again, we're just starting to learn about, they call it CAPA now, so COVID-associated pulmonary aspergillosis. It's an important subject, and we have a lot to learn there.
So in your experience, we don't have to be massively afraid of side effects of tocilizumab, right?
No, so in our trial, as I said, we had relatively little reporting of secondary infections that were related to the tocilizumab, and that's something that comes back in all the trials. So as you said, the Brazilian study did stop for signals of potential harm. What that is difficult to say, because early on in a trial, you can have chance findings. So I don't know what happened there. I'm a bit surprised that they had such a low mortality rate in their standard of care arm. It was 3%, which is really low, even for a population admitted to just a ward with oxygen. And in the end, their result doesn't exclude a signal of benefit, and it doesn't exclude a signal of harm. They had hydroxychloroquine as standard of care. In a lot of patients, we know that does patients harm. So it's very hard to disentangle all these things.
Right, but I think taken together, we are all very reassured by the safety profile that we've seen in REMAP-CAP and recovery. And so the side effects are not a problem, but perhaps the price of this drug is a problem. Is it an expensive drug, Lenny? Is it something that we can be used everywhere in the world?
So there's good news and bad news. So this is definitely a lot more expensive than, for instance, corticosteroids. The price differs across the globe. In the Netherlands, it's about 1,000 euros for a course, like a COVID-19 course, which is one or two administrations of the drug. So that is a lot of money. 1,000 euros, that's not cheap. On the other hand, in the same country, so again, the Netherlands, the country I live in, a day in ICU costs about 2,500 euros at least. So, you know, if you can prevent deaths and time spent in ICU with this drug, then, you know, that balances out. But, you know, it's definitely a problem that countries like lower middle income countries, poorer countries will not be able to afford it. And I also don't know if the global supply can keep up with the demand.
That's also a very important question. Can the producers produce as much tocilizumab as we would need, right? Can you share with us how did you apply tocilizumab? What was the dosage that has been applied and for how long, please?
We gave 8 milligrams per kilogram, capped at 100 kilograms, so never more than 800 milligrams. And we gave that as an IV infusion once. And then the clinician was allowed to repeat that dose 12 to 24 hours later if the patient was not getting better clinically. So that was intentionally, you know, kind of vaguely described because it's a pragmatic trial. We did want to, you know, be in line with clinical practice where, you know, you go back a day later and if your patient is not doing better or is doing worse, you would repeat the dose of tocilizumab if you thought that that was the issue still. Obviously, people would not give the second dose if they thought there was a different problem like pulmonary emboli or something similar. About a third of patients got a second dose. And we tried to find out more about the difference between the patients who did or did not get a second dose. But actually, all you can say is the ones who got a second dose were sicker, which, you know, something you would expect.
Very good. So now let's try to summarize everything again. Tell us, which patients are coming to the hospital with COVID-19 should receive tocilizumab?
So what I think is that recovery has shown that if you are dependent on oxygen or more, and you have a CRP over 75, even if you've been in the hospital for a couple of days, it can still be useful to give tocilizumab. What REMAP-CAP shows is if people with COVID-19 are admitted to ICU, I should now add, haven't had tocilizumab before, so that was not the situation in our trial, but that's the situation now with recovery, then as soon as they hit the ICU and they need respiratory or cardiovascular organ support, then according to the results of the REMAP-CAP trial, they should receive tocilizumab.
Okay, so everyone that needs ventilatory support and is in the hospital, and especially if they ended up requiring ICU care, should get the drug, provided they are receiving steroids, or at least they received steroids, right? So because there's no evidence that tocilizumab is working in patients without steroid therapy.
Yes, that's an excellent addition. And I think, you know, that automatically brings you to the next question, because if people are now going to receive tocilizumab before they get admitted to ICU, then, you know, what is the patient group that remains? You know, what is this still a patient group with this hyperinflammatory problem, or are we looking at a different problem? Those, I think, are the questions that we're going to have to answer in the near future.
But I guess it brings us to the point that we have to discuss which are the questions that we have to address in the future. As with every good trial, REMAP-CAP and recovery left us with some questions. And one you just told us, which is the group? Is the group that despite having received steroids have a high CRP and is deteriorating? Which are the other questions do you think we should try to go on and examine in regard of tocilizumab?
The question we want to answer is, what is the best treatment regimen for patients, you know, hitting the ward or the ICU, depending on where you want to do the study? is what is the best treatment regimen? So that also includes how do we attack, for instance, this problem of thrombosis? Because that may be something we have to solve with anticoagulation, but it could also be wholly or partly immune mediated. So maybe we attack the thrombosis by giving immune modulators. We don't know. And that's why one of the strengths of REMAP-CAP, because we do investigate the whole treatment regimen. We randomize people for multiple aspects of their treatment at the same time. So in the end, hopefully, we'll be able to answer the question, is tocilizumab with anticoagulation strategy X better than tocilizumab with anticoagulation strategy Y? So that is, I think, the first part of the answer is we're trying to look at the whole regimen of things and not just one single treatment at a time. And the second thing is, and I think you already alluded to that, is which patients after all these treatments now still get so severely ill that they end up in the ICU, and what can we do for them? Is that yet another immune modulating treatment, or do we have to find other routes, other drugs to make them improve? Those are, I think, two important things.
Great. I still have one question. Do you think the effect is different depending on which kind of IL-6 blockage do you use? Do you expect one compound to be superior to other one, or do you think it's a class effect?
Yeah, so we did include both sarilumab and tocilizumab in REMAP-CAP, and they both gave the same signal. What you will see in the paper is that there were relatively few patients randomized to sarilumab. That's because that was just not available in many places. We used a strategy called nesting, or we borrowed information from the tocilizumab group for sarilumab and the other way around. So we actually started out by saying this is probably a class effect. The drugs will probably work very similar, and that's now also what we see in the results. So for tocilizumab and sarilumab, I think it is a class effect, but there are not a lot of sarilumab studies out yet. There are other ways to block IL-6, for instance, by using siltuximab. That hasn't been tested out in either REMAP-CAP or recovery. So that could be an alternative strategy, but we just don't know at this point.
And could you please tell us something about the combination of an antiviral with IL-6 blockage? Any hopes to have effect of remdesivir in combination with IL-6 blockage?
Yes, so I think that's one of the surprises of this pandemic, isn't it? That the antivirals so far have not made such a huge difference as the steroids and the IL-6 receptor antagonists have. You can interpret the data on remdesivir in various ways, but I think if remdesivir is effective, it's on the ward and definitely not on the ICU. So that, I think, again, is in line with this picture of people suffering from the virus in the beginning, but later on suffering mainly from the immune response. So about 30% of patients in our trial was co-treated with remdesivir on the ICU. We haven't broken apart the remdesivir plus and the remdesivir minus patients. So that is something we don't know. So I actually don't have high hopes for antivirals for the ICU patients, because I think they probably don't suffer from that anymore, unless we would get, you know, very potent antivirals that could work. So I think the most important thing that this pandemic has taught us is to not make assumptions, but to do a trial. Because at the beginning of the pandemic, people were using hydroxychloroquine and were very afraid of steroids and immune modulators. So I think for me, that's the biggest lesson. We can think we know, but we have to do a trial to find out.
So for the remdesivir, we would expect it to work early on the viral response phase for the IL-6 blockage for the host inflammatory phase. But it's still a lot of questions to be answered. REMAP-CAP have brought one step further, a big step further, and together with recovery, really gave us some more inputs and some hope in this important phase of trying to find out how to treat the patients. And I think Lenny has just said something really important, that in data we trust, we can assume things, but actually to know, we will have to perform the trials. Lenny, thank you very much. We didn't know each other. I think you did a great job. And really, thanks again for doing this study, because it's it was more work than doing the podcast, I'm sure. But it was a very helpful thing to do. And I think it is a very important information for the whole community. So thank you again. I hope the ERS can count on you in the future.
No, thanks, Ayana. I really, really enjoyed it. And let's have coffee the next time ERS has a non-virtual meeting.
Absolutely. Barcelona, yes. Thank you again.
Thank you very much for joining us for the first in the new podcast series from the ERS. And thank you, Dr. Leni Dird, for her contributions and insights on the topic. The recommendations provided by Dr. Leni Dird around the use of tocilizumab in severe COVID-19 pneumonia are in line with the recommendations of the ERS guidelines. The ERS COVID guidelines apply to hospitalized patients and should be available at the ERJ. If you are an ERS member, you can log in and have a look. And we sincerely hope that this information is based on a meta-analysis of all randomized controlled trials published around the COVID treatment of hospitalized patients will be helpful to you to decide how to treat the patients you are encountering. Just to let you know that two new podcasts will be released on the ERS Respiratory Channel each month, featuring hot topics, each with expert speakers. Thank you.